Continuing discussion of guru issues. These are discussions of issues, discussions, bringing out some of the points without necessarily laying down, it has to be like this, or it has to be like that, but just bringing out some of the nuances, the various complex situations that can arise when we're dealing with people. People are very complex. Even we say someone has a simple personality, but no one's that simple. And then we're asking them to surrender through the medium of a guru, to surrender to Krishna, and how complex human interactions can be, even between guru and disciple. There are many issues which may arise. Today I'm talking about initiation standards, just some points concerning standards. It's pretty clear and straightforward what Srila Prabhupada gave, minimum chanting 16 rounds daily and following four regulated principles. Srila Prabhupada did give some leeway that if you can't complete 16 rounds in a day, you should make it up the next day if you're very busy, but that shouldn't be a normal habit. He didn't like when devotees were not chanting 16 rounds. It may be that one is too sick to chant. For days it can go on. What happens if it goes on for weeks or months? Sridhar Swami Maharaj, my godbrother, he told me shortly before he passed away, he told me he hadn't chanted 16 rounds for months. He'd been very, very sick for many months. But he was living in Mayapur with devotees. Does there come a time when you don't have to chant 16 rounds? That can be asked. We see Harihar Thakur, he had a vow of chanting 3 lakhs of names a day. Then he had the pastime of being sick in old age, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to him, well, you've chanted all your life, you don't have to chant now. But Haridas didn't like that very much, and then shortly afterwards he left this world by his own desire. There's 16 rounds a day, and then, well, that's minimum, right? Anything wrong in chanting more? We shouldn't think there's anything wrong in chanting. Of course, if someone makes a show of chanting to avoid service, that's not very good. But if someone is chanting more rounds, they have time, they have inclination, that should be encouraged. The traditional standard is 64 rounds. Maybe in old age, when devotees have less physical engagement, at least at that time, they could chant more rounds. Anyway, we're talking about initiation standards. So Srila Prabhupada gave the minimum 16 rounds a day, and that is supposed to be cultivating an attitude of pure devotional service. So there should be some understanding that when one gets initiated, there should be some understanding of what I'm doing here. It's not just 16 rounds and four regulated principles, which is quite a big thing, but 16 rounds, four regulated principles, and this is the path I'm going on, the path back to Godhead. Am I really on the path? Is that really what I want? Actually, the essence of initiation, as I've said many times, especially in initiation lectures, is not 16 rounds and four regulated principles. It is the determination, the commitment to surrender to Krishna, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu states in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find dikkha kale bhakta kare atta samarpan. At the time of initiation, a devotee completely gives himself to Krishna via the guru. So that's the essence. So 16 rounds, four regulated principles. What are the four regulated principles? There may be various interpretations. no meat eating. Does that extend to cheese made with rennet, which is taken from cow stomachs? Is it all right to take medicine with a slight amount of alcohol, just like some alcohol-based Ayurvedic medicines? Apparently, that's okay, at least in Srila Prabhupada's teachings, as I was told by either Jananivasa or Pankajangari Prabhu in Mayapur many years ago, that when devotees in Mayapur, Western devotees, were getting sick with liver problems, Srila Prabhupada told them to take Bengal Chemical. It's a famous company in Bengal, West Bengal, to take their Calmeg decoction, which is strongly, it's based on alcohol. Calmeg is a very bitter root herb. So you're supposed to take that with water. It'd be very hard to drink a lot of it at a time, enough to get tipsy. But there may be some leeway, and we have to see how far do you take it. Does that mean that in the name of medicine, you get bottles and bottles of Ayurvedic medicine, which is made with alcohol, and drink that? Of course not. No meat, no fish, no eggs. Apparently, and that's widely accepted, Srila Prabhupada was told that in the Western countries, in America, the milk that is widely available in cities, you can't get any other milk at that time, at least. You can't purchase from the store any milk which doesn't have fish oil mixed with it. And apparently Srila Prabhupada said to use it anyway. Does that mean that it's okay to drink fish oil? What about gambling? Stocks and shares? Futures? Does it constitute gambling? I've discussed this in some lecture. The illicit sex, what is the definition of that? Srila Prabhupada, the definition he gave is no sexual activity except that meant for procreation within marriage. And many devotees follow that, but apparently there are many who don't also. And as far as I see, Srila Prabhupada didn't discuss in detail about this. He would initiate husbands and wives and already married. He'd tell them the standard, but he didn't get deeply into what they're actually doing. What about initiating homosexuals? We know with heterosexuals, if they're not married, they have an escape valve, in as much as they can get married and have sex according to religious principles. Of course, it's not meant for indulgence, but there is a way out, so to speak. There is a license. Yes, Srila Prabhupada called married life a license for sense gratification. So there is a way to engage the sexual propensity in a way which is concordant with Krishna conscious principles, but for homosexuals they don't have that, so it becomes very difficult for that. I initiated once a devotee who, after he was initiated, told me that he was a homosexual, and okay, told me that he was a very nice devotee, and everyone appreciated his service and everything, but there came a time when he just left. No one was getting on his case for being what he was, but it can be very difficult. It's a big risk then. It's a bigger risk than, in general, generally speaking in generalities here, it's a bigger risk for the person who takes the vow and for the person, the guru, who accepts the vow. 16 rounds. Apparently, Srila Prabhupada initiated many devotees in Mayapur who it was seen that they didn't churn 16 rounds. And that syndrome continued, at least when I was in Bengal through in the 1970s and 1980s. I saw that many initiated devotees, they either didn't chant 16 rounds or that they'd say they chanted 16 rounds, but their rounds would be finished in 3 minutes. And you'd see their hands sometimes in their bead bag and they didn't seem to be chanting anything, or it'd be so quiet you couldn't hear it, and they'd finish all their rounds in half an hour or something like this. But Srila Prabhupada initiated them anyway, many of them, and many initiates I saw in Bengal, they continued. Nowadays, devotees overseeing initiations in Bengal are more strict, and they want to see that the devotees actually are chanting 16 rounds. But there are quite a few devotees who Srila Prabhupada initiated, and many of them are doing good service in Mayapur, and he didn't seem to make a big fuss about them, about their japa standards. There are some devotees who seem to just expect that they're going to get initiated at some point, even if they don't follow that seriously. There's one devotee I know who, born in a devotee family, lives in a Vaishnav community, but not habituated to rising early in the morning. Chants, yeah. Does some service, but just presumes, well, everyone gets initiated, so I should get initiated also, without being super serious about sadhana. And many do get initiated like that. Okay, they're children of devotees, so all right. Let's take them along. But each guru will have to see for himself. The basic standards are there. Some will be more strict in giving initiation, some less so. Srila Prabhupada said that giving first initiation is giving a chance. If someone shows some propensity for coming up. At the same time, we see that Srila Prabhupada, at least in the beginning of his ISKCON, he was very liberal in giving initiation, especially in San Francisco. But later he became more strict, and he became very, at least in the West, he was preaching very strongly, don't recommend unless they're actually following. He said that the responsibility is with those who recommend, the temple presidents. And Srila Prabhupada wanted to tighten things up. So the standards for initiation, previously we wanted to see in the 1970s, at least when I joined in 1975, we wanted to see that devotees were rising early, fully engaged in devotional service, because the standard for an initiation, or the standard to be a devotee in ISKCON in the Western world, was that you lived in a temple. And it was expected, if you're going to get initiated, well, you live in a temple, that means you have to get up, you have to go to Mangalati, you have to attend the whole morning program, you have to engage in devotional service all the time. Those standards have changed now, because most devotees are what we call congregational members. And whether or not they all have Mangalati or attend a Mangalati in temple, or they have Mangalati late, or whether or not they're taking only Krishna prasadam, that's one standard which has really slipped a lot, so much so that it hardly seems to be a standard anymore at all in many places and among many devotees. It's just taken as normal that devotees can eat in a vegetarian restaurant or buy some bread here, there, or anywhere from anyone. So the spread of the movement, the congregational spread of the movement, it seems is practically necessitated that standards have slipped, that devotees don't have a full sadhana program from 4:30 in the morning till at least 8:30 in the morning. Every day, just by necessity, because by 8:30 most of our devotees, they're on their way to work. I don't know any guru in our movement who's so strict that says you have to have a full sadhana program, even though I believe that's a law of ISKCON, that you have to have a full morning program to be initiated. But it's impractical for many devotees. Somehow or other, if they chant 16 rounds, they can slip under. And it may be that they're very serious devotees. Their commitment is there, but they have material commitments which are so binding that they can't practice Krishna consciousness to the level that they would like to. And then we can see eventually when they retire, they can start to do so. In the meantime, they're being carried along, they're getting initiated, there's some sense of commitment. So like Srila Prabhupada said, it's giving a chance. Of course, to be initiated, 16 rounds, four regulated principles, and some proper understanding should be there also. We don't want to see people at home, they have deities of Gaur-Nitai and Radha Krishna and demigods. They should understand that we are here to surrender to Krishna via the Guru. And that means, Mame Kam Sharanam Raja, we worship Krishna, we won't worship demigods. There can be some somewhat complex cases. A devotee, disciple of mine, wrote to me about 2 years ago about his father-in-law, asking if his father-in-law could be ultimately initiated. His position, his father-in-law's position, is that he's all his life been, or all his adult life, been a Karmakandya priest. He does Hindu religious ceremonies for Hindu people, things like marriage ceremonies, death rites, then engagements, and then not so many are followed nowadays, but these would be the main ones. And also it's very common for Karmakandya priests to do Satyanarayan pujas for people so they can get some material benefits, even though it's worshipping Narayana. It's very much in the scope of Karmakanda. It's definitely seen as worship for the sake of getting material benefits. After coming to Krishna consciousness, reading Srila Prabhupada's books, associated with devotees, he thought that, well, even though my father did it, my grandfather did it, all my forefathers did it, this is not so good for someone who wants to be in the pure devotional line. So he wanted to sustain himself in another way. Then he did some other jobs. He was working in a computer company, something which doesn't... To work in a computer company, there's no religious or philosophical position per se. You do a job, you get money. Whereas with Karmakanda, you're encouraging people in a religious mode which binds them in material life. So this father-in-law of a devotee, he was working in some job, but then he got an opportunity, being a Brahmin by caste, he got an opportunity to worship in a temple, a Hindu temple, and he got some stipend for that, a Shiva temple, which was more to his taste. He understands that Vishnu is supreme, There are demigods. The demigods are not supreme. But he took up, you could say, a job, so to speak, as a pujari, and he was doing that. So the question is it suitable for him to be initiated? So it's a question. I'm just bringing this up as the kind of things that we may have to consider. Someone's worshipping Shiva as a job, so to speak, to maintain his family. Is that in itself acceptable? Well, there are generations of priests who have done such things, and still do that. It used to be that priests would live off donations or that from devotees coming to the temples, or they would be supported by local rich men, kings. Nowadays, they get a stipend or a payment or something like that, which Srila Prabhupada didn't like that pujari should be paid. The question arises that, well, we want to spread Krishna consciousness to as many as people as possible, but we have to be careful in bringing in persons who are not really devotees at heart. They could be coming in for other reasons. Those who know the history of Narottam Das Thakur know that two leading Smartha Brahmanas became his disciples. And that's the way casteism works in India, that if a leader within your caste does something, then others they also like to follow. So many followers of these two, among whom the most famous was this Ganga Narayan Chakravarti. So many of those other brahmanas who had looked up to him, they thought, oh, he became a Vaishnav, got initiated as a Vaishnav, we shall do also. But they hadn't undergone the change of heart that he had done. So they adopted Vaishnava customs, but they brought in a consciousness, a smarter consciousness, into Vaishnavism. That's how that is explained. And then they operated among the growing Vaishnav community. They operated as the priests. It's natural within society that there are priests. And then if you become a Vaishnava and you have your regular priest, the family priest who does all family functions, like I'm saying, the Annaprashana and Simanto Nayana, before that, Garbhadhan Sanskar, all these things. So what do? If you go out of the smarter system, you come into the Vaishnav system. So many smarters, seeing that many people were becoming Vaishnavas, that may be another reason they became Vaishnavas, so they could get the clientele of the Vaishnavas. And in this way, they converted Vaishnavism they brought in a strong element of smarter consciousness, and they became the ritual brahmanas doing all these activities, and in this way, smarter contamination entered the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya. This is one explanation. Similarly, Virachandra Prabhu, the son of Srila Nityananda Prabhu, he brought a Sahajiya Buddhist sect into the Gaudiya Vaishnava line. This Sahajiya, we think that's a Vaishnava subsect, but actually the Sahajiya sect, it's apparently existed long before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent in Bengal, and many Buddhists were sahajiyas. It's hard to imagine, but it was a different flavor of sahajiyarism. And maybe the sahajiya sect even predated Buddhism. It's hard to say historically, but it's well accepted that Virachandra Prabhu, he brought a Sahajiya Buddhist sect into the Gaudiya Vaishnava fold. But they continued, or many of them continued, with their wrong ideas and practices. And this was a major factor in bringing Sahajiyaism into Gaudiya Vaishnavism. That is how two examples of interpretations of Gaudiya Vaishnava history. So what do we understand, or what are we to deduce from this? We have to be careful who we bring in. There may be people who come into Krishna consciousness, and Srila Prabhupada, he mentions this, that some people, they come into Krishna consciousness for the sake of economic development, and then they leave when their economic development actually happens. And living in the West, we may not understand this, especially in the early days of this movement in the Western countries, where devotees were very poor. But in India, the devotees started building big opulent temples, and for many people who joined our movement and became brahmacharis. But for many people who joined our movement and became brahmacharis in India, for them to join our temple and become full-time devotees was a step up socially and economically. And many were sent out to collect funds, and they were meeting rich people and having the respect of a sadhu, and then many of them got married. And because they know the collection business, they continued collecting, and it's not all for Krishna. Not saying they're not devotees, but taking advantage of the ISKCON institution to become promoted upward social mobility. Should we initiate such people when they have underlying motives? It may be difficult to see the underlying motives. What do you do when they're initiated? Throw them out, or they bring in good money. Money, money, money. We need money. Yes, we do. So what do we do in such cases? It's something like in the police in India. At least I can say about India. There may be many countries where corruption is rife. If someone wants to be in the police and he wants to be honest, he won't be appreciated. Police or any government service, especially some position where you are in a position to, many of the positions, you're in a position to, some officer, you have to sign the paper so someone can get their work done. You're in a position to take bribes. So someone who doesn't take bribes, who isn't corrupt, they become very much suspected and disliked by the other government officers around them, because they see that this person is a threat to us. So we have that situation, or we have seen that situation, where people come in, they see, well, it's a good way to make a living. You can join ISKCON, and there are some rules to follow, but it's a good way to get up. And previously, not so much now, you can be a good pujari for a few years, and then you'll be eligible to go to America, and you can be a pujari for a few more years in America, then you get your green card, then boom. So he sacrificed 10 years as a pujari in ISKCON, first in India, then in America, and then you can get ahead and build your life in America. And most of those who did that, and there were quite a few, they continued as devotees. It's not they weren't devotees, but not exactly in the line of full dedication to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission only. So should they be initiated or not? This is the kind of question that arises. Back to the pujari, come karmakanda priest, come sometime computer company employee. What should you do in such a case? The underlying basis of performing karmakanda rituals is the idea that dharmasya hi pavargasya. We have in the Bhagavatam, dharmasya hi pavargasya. Dharma or religious processes are meant for ultimate liberation. But if you take the out of the apavargasya, then what generally goes on is that the dharma or religious rituals are performed for perpetuating our material life. And karma kanda is very much concerned with perpetuating our material life in a pious way. So one opinion, I consulting different devotees about this, one opinion is this is not a good idea that he should continue with this because it's antithetical to the whole idea of being a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and getting initiated. Then the suggestion came, well, maybe he could, instead of performing the rituals for materialistic people in a materialistic way, he could do that for Vaishnava householders. Then he'd have to be awarded second initiation along with the first on the condition that he will no longer perform these karmakanda rituals as a profession or take up a secular job. There's always a need of pujaris and cooks in ISKCON temples, so that's a possibility. Yeah, then you're getting initiated so you can get a job as a pujari or cook in an ISKCON temple. Not so wonderful either. But on the other hand, he is serious to be a devotee. He wants to be a devotee. He knows the philosophy. He's chanting 16 rounds. He's following the principles. But his life situation is like this. So what should he do? He should go to the secular world and just get a job like so many others. Previously, prior to getting this request for initiation, I had initiated two men who were karmakanda priests by background. One thing is, it's hard for them to get any other profession. This is what they've been doing all their life. They're trained in it. They know it. I told them to get their clients, you could say, or the people who come to them, to say Hare Krishna and to give them one of Prabhupada's books. Karma Kanda is within the broader scope of Varnashram Dharma. How much we promote it is questionable. We see that many Madhva Brahmanas, they do karma kanda for the people in general, but they're very fixed in the understanding. Hari Sarvottama, Hari Bhagavan Krishna is on the top level. If you do a secular job, which is not grossly sinful by nature, you're still part of the society which is grossly sinful by nature, although the job may not be grossly sinful. But nothing is fully clean in this sinful society. I thought about a couple of cases. I thought about three cases. One is that after initiating Vasudev Das in Fiji, the question arose in his family, because his family was maybe the biggest business family in Fiji, very big business family. They had a chain of shops, and among the items they sold was meat. So the question arose that, well, shouldn't he be told to stop selling meat? And Prabhupada said, no, let them go on and let them realize for themselves that they shouldn't sell meat. Actually, Prabhupada said, no, let them go on doing it. And the devotees understood that in course of time he'll realize for himself, which he did quite soon. Another case, Purijan Prabhu writes about this in his book, My Glorious Master. If you haven't read that book, please read it. It's very inspiring, informative, enlightening, instructive. Now, Purijan Prabhu, at some point, he started a business selling tapestry handbags. And he was making quite a good profit. The business was going well. And he used to send Srila Prabhupada checks, a donation every week. Although previously, he and his wife had been serving Srila Prabhupada's mission in Hong Kong as full-time dedicated preachers. So he relates in that book that he felt guilty that he was neither serving Srila Prabhupada in Hong Kong nor back in Australia. His wife's from Australia. He wasn't living in the temple. He was living outside doing a business. And he was selling something, tapestry handbags, which is a long way from being a sinful item. And he was giving Srila Prabhupada regular donations. But Srila Prabhupada, when Purijan Prabhu spoke about this with Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was enthusiastic about the business. And he said, it's good, it's a good business. And Purijan was surprised and he said, well, I'm selling handbags, how is that good? And he described that Prabhupada looked at me soberly and said, one has to do something. In this regard, Purijan Prabhu commented in his book, a householder living outside the temple must support his family. By Krishna's mercy, I both supported my family through a relatively sinless enterprise and was able to send weekly donations to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's appreciation of these small successes led him to term my business good. Another instance I can relate, this from my own personal experience, a devotee in Hyderabad, I met him probably in the 1990s. He was elderly at that time and has almost certainly passed away in the meantime. He told me that he attended some of Srila Prabhupada's lectures in the 1970s in Hyderabad, which were attended by literally thousands of people, and that after attending some of the lectures, he came to meet Srila Prabhupada at ISKCON's temple in Hyderabad. And Prabhupada met him, and this gentleman, whose name I forget, told Srila Prabhupada that I'm doing toddy business. Toddy means naturally fermented alcohol, palm sap alcohol. And he said, but now he told Srila Prabhupada, now I realize that this is wrong. So should I stop it? And he told me, this man told me, that Srila Prabhupada thought for a moment. He said, well, you have to support your family. Now, isn't that amazing? It's selling alcohol. But Srila Prabhupada said, you have to support your family. I can only guess that Srila Prabhupada, from his own experience as a businessman, a man of the world, understood that to earn a living and to support a family, it's not such an easy thing. And that a person in midlife, after doing a business for so many years, it may be very difficult for him to just leave one business and go on to do something else. So Srila Prabhupada saw in practical terms. Of course, at that point, that man didn't ask for initiation. Later, he retired and lived in the temple full time. This was after Srila Prabhupada passed away. I met him in the 1990s, and he was initiated. That wasn't exactly a question about initiation, just about whether or not he should continue with his business. Anyway, I'm just bringing out some issues. Sometimes, who to initiate, you have to see. It may not be so straightforward. Years ago in Bangladesh, there was one or two young girls wanted to be initiated by me, but the town president didn't want to recommend. He said, no, we don't like to recommend young girls, because what happens in many cases is that they get married to fish eaters or meat eaters, and then they're obliged to follow their husband, and they can't follow. So we don't like to recommend, only after initiation, only after marriage, we'll see their situation. A similar thing happened in Hyderabad, again talking about Hyderabad, where some girls wanted to be initiated, but the temple authorities, this was from Srila Prabhupada, they wanted to be initiated from Srila Prabhupada, the temple authorities were doubtful about whether they'd be able to continue following all the vows after marriage, because society is like that, especially Indian society, especially at that time, and still like that. The wife has to follow the husband. So if the husband forces the wife, now you have to cook meat, eat meat, then what will the wife do? Then she'll be forced to break the principles all her life, which is why previously in Bengal, I read a book by a Christian English woman talking about the position of women in Calcutta, and this would be maybe early 20th century, that many of them were devoutly religious, but the Vaishnavas or the Vaishnavis, they would not want to take initiation until after bearing children, till their childbearing period was over, because they wouldn't be able to follow all the vows. They'd be busy with their children and so on and so on. But anyway, in the case of the girls in Hyderabad, Srila Prabhupada said he was willing to give them initiation. He said, if you want to be pure, you can remain pure in any circumstances. But the temple authorities weren't happy with that, and they didn't get initiated. Srila Prabhupada's sister, at least one of his sisters, she was initiated by Srila Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur. She was married by Srila Prabhupada's father, got her married. Srila Prabhupada's father, pure Vaishnava, himself in their house, they never had meat, any such thing. But he got her married to a meat eater. And throughout life, the family she was married into was good enough to let her remain as a vegetarian. But apparently she had to prepare food for the family, which was non-vegetarian. So all these complex situations arise. I'm bringing them out just food for thought. We should be careful who we initiate, or shouldn't we? Should we be very liberal? Different gurus will have to see. There are basic standards for giving initiation within ISKCON, but there are so many complex and subtle situations. Ultimately, the guru has to take sinful reactions, especially of those who don't follow. So these are points to consider. Presently, Srila Prabhupada's disciples are physically old. They're not going to be here much longer. A whole new generation of gurus is coming in. So these are questions that they will have to consider individually. And there are all kinds of other complex situations that could arise. I'm just talking about some things that I know about in my own experience and that I've heard about or read about. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas charkipas indubhya eva chapadit anam pavane pil vaishnavi.